Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You're now listening to the Sitting in the Park show with Bob. Today we have a very special show because up here in the studio now is Chicago group The Vows. So it's going to be an interview all show. It should be a very interesting show. So I was wondering if you guys up in here could introduce yourselves. We got three people and one mic. So,
hi, I'm Berlin Bynum.
Lawrence Bibbs.
I'm Kirk Davis.
Okay, and just to give a little bit of background, The Vows had some excellent harmony cuts with Lost in the City and When a Boy Loves a Girl, and they were sort of from the first generation of Chicago soul groups from the early 60s, so it's definitely going to be a very interesting show, and they had a lot of history. So there's definitely a good story to tell, so you should definitely listen. So usually when I do interviews with groups, I try to do it chronologically, sort of starting off with first of all, where you guys are from and how the group was formed. So first of all, could you tell me sort of when you formed? First of all, where are you guys all from?
Chicago.
Where in Chicago?
Where is that?
And you were telling me you were from like the K-Town area, right?
Right.
Yeah. Like so. You guys were telling me you formed in the late 50s originally, right?
Right, around 59.
Okay, so how did you guys form, and who were the original members of the group?
Well, I'm one of the original members, and Lawrence is one of the original members.
Okay, so how did you guys all meet and sort of meet each other and form?
Well, we met, Lawrence and I just met in the neighborhood. We had moved west. And his family had moved west, my family had moved west, and we met there. Actually, when we started singing, we actually just kind of met on the corner.
Okay.
That kind of happened on the corner.
Okay, so you and Lawrence were sort of harmonizing, and then the other guys also, you just kind of all accidentally met each other.
Right. Lawrence and I was messing around on the corner, and another friend of ours that later joined the group, Arthur, was on his porch, and he heard us, and he came down, and he said, "Hey, you guys sing," and, you know, it kind of evolved from there with him.
So a lot of groups, they went to the same school, but you guys didn't go to the same school, right?
Oh, we went to different schools.
Okay. So how old were you guys when you guys first started singing at that time?
I was 16.
Okay.
Yeah, 17.
So you're all around 16 or 17. So when you guys started singing, you were telling me the story about how you were originally doing it in the corner, and then the father of one of the group members started yelling at you, and you had to go into the garage, right?
Right. Arthur's father started actually to complain because we were meeting up on the corner.
Okay.
Like every night. It was like during the summer.
Okay.
So he started complaining about it. So Lawrence's mother let us rehearse in the garage, and that's where we started rehearsing at.
Okay, so and you guys just started singing because that's what kids did at the time, right?
Right.
So were there specific groups that influenced you, or that's just you were just doing what everybody was doing?
Like actually, we liked everybody.
Okay.
So there was no problem with no special people. I mean, you know, you always had somebody you liked, but everybody was good, so you liked everybody.
Okay.
Like Lil Anthony and Imperials.
Yeah.
You know, everybody was doing good.
Moon Glows. You
know, okay.
Spaniels.
Rawls,
okay.
All those groups.
So, and the original guys that were singing, you were telling me, ended up not being the original group that recorded, right?
Right.
Like, there was already a lineup change even before you recorded. So what happened with that?
Well, Arthur was actually, he was in school, and his father kind of put him in a position where, hey, you're going to go to school, or either you're going to sing. And he said that he wanted to sing, and his father said, no, you're going to school.
So, yeah, my brother, he was singing bass, and he just decided he didn't want to sing bass no more.
Okay. So you had to get extra members to fill in those positions, right?
Right.
So mm-hmm. You just recruited other people that you knew from the neighborhood?
Well, actually, we people would come around all the time, you know, and they want to try to get in a group that sounded like something. So it wasn't hard.
Okay. So ultimately, I guess the story what happened is Well, first of all, can you tell what the sort of final original lineup of the group was that finally ended up recording?
Myself, Lawrence, Fuzzy, and Larry Montgomery.
Okay, what was Fuzzy's real name?
Joseph Buckner.
Oh, okay. So you guys ended up, you were telling me the story about how Ruth Moore, who was ultimately became your manager, sort of discovered you when you were in the garage, right?
Right.
So what happened? You guys were just singing one day, and then she came by?
Yeah, we were rehearsing, and she came out in her back to empty garbage.
Okay.
And she heard us down in the alley, and she came down and traced the sound, actually, and came in garage, and we looked up, and this little lady was standing there, and we were wondering what was happening. And, you know, she just started to ask us questions, how long we've been doing it, and those kind of things, you know.
So when was that that she discovered you? That was around, like, 1960, you think?
Late 59, 60.
Okay, and ultimately you ended up recording this first record. I'll play the record, and then we can talk some more about the context, the background of the record.
Fine.
So this was the first record you recorded, right? This is called When a Boy Loves a Girl.
Lawrence was on lead on that one.
Okay, so here it goes. Okay, that was just DeVals with When a Boy Loves a Girl. We're back here in the studio doing an interview. I was wondering if you mentioned the different members of the group, but could you say which part each member sang?
Well, I can sing mostly all the parts, so I sing from tenor all the way down to the bass. I'm Lawrence.
Okay.
And I sang baritone, and Fuzzy was kind of in the same mode that Lawrence was in, and Larry sang first tenor.
Okay, so you switch the Lawrence and Fuzzy switched off parts depending on what song it was.
Right.
So going back to sort of how you ended up recording your first record was you signed up with Ruth Moore, and actually I interviewed Ruth Moore interviewed a bunch of Chicago groups, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I interviewed James Westbrook of the Five Wagers like a few months ago, and the Five Wagers were one of the groups she managed later.
Right.
But you guys were one of the original groups that she managed, right?
Yes.
Yes.
So were you actually the first group that she ever managed?
I couldn't say the first. I don't know.
I think we were. I think we were the first one.
I'm not sure because when we came.
I think that she had, earlier she had tried to work with a couple of groups, but she didn't really manage them.
Or like they never recorded anything or something?
No.
Yeah, it was since those guys that did the Gorilla, they came through there.
She worked with the Ideals, you're saying?
She worked with the Ideals. Yeah,
okay.
She worked with them. She worked with Billy Butler.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that.
And Chapman, what was that?
The Chanters.
Chanters. Yeah, she worked with them.
But that was all after us.
Well, it was after. But
oh, okay, but you were the original group. I was trying to find out if she did anything.
Okay.
So, you guys, we'll talk more about some of the other groups you managed, because you guys actually had a hand in writing some of their songs, too, which we'll talk about. But I guess what happened is that record I just played came out, I think, 1963, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, ultimately, originally you guys were just doing other people's songs, like sort of doing...
Right.
With like shows, what kind of shows were you doing originally before you had any material? Were you still in school at that time?
Yeah, I was still in school. We were doing basically a variety of tunes. The group was very versatile.
Okay,
we worked. We did pop, jazz, R&B. So we did just about everything.
What kind of places were you working at before you had a record out?
Mostly clubs.
Oh, okay, so you were already working in clubs. Mm-hmm. So you guys were like about 19 or 20 at that time?
Right.
Okay, and then finally, I guess in 1963, you got on a record label and released that record. And that record was released originally on a label called Big Three.
Right.
And a guy named Bob Lee owned that label, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't know the story about how you ended up actually recording something? Like, you found out that... Like, Ruth Moore finally got a connection to somebody who was going to put something out, is that right?
Yes,
basically, that's what happened.
So were you excited to find that out, or what happened when you found out you were going to record something?
We were excited about recording. We had been looking forward to recording, you know.
So, and you guys actually, although you weren't credited on the record, you guys actually wrote that song, right?
Okay, I wrote both sides.
Okay, so you're the sole writer on both sides.
Yeah.
So how did you write the song? Did you just sing harmonize and do the melody, and then you wrote out the words?
Well, actually, I was sitting down at the piano, which Miss Moore had in the basement.
Okay.
And she had shown me a couple of chords, and that's all it took. The same couple of chords we write a million songs to. That's
okay.
What I did, and I came up with the two songs like that.
Yeah, both sides are really excellent of this record. Like collectors all over the world are looking for that record, because it's an early record for that has a sound like that, because it's you know, soul and not doo-wop, and it's got really nice sort of soul harmony ahead of its time.
It's a blend of doo-wop and soul.
Yeah, transitional is what
vintage,
a lot of
Plus, actually, that's the way a lot of people lost stuff, you know, because they were not. You know, they didn't have the knowledge about what to do with a song when they wrote it, or how to get it out, and who to talk to get it out there. So when somebody tell you, well, you're going to get a break, you're so happy about getting a break, supposed to be on the song, too. So
yeah, I mean, most of the groups I talk to, that's their first experience. They get ripped off by somebody before they learn.
Yeah.
It's a learning process.
Yeah.
So, we'll talk more about this record, but next I'm playing the B side of the record, which is equally as good, in my opinion. This song is called Lost in a City.
That's the way that I want it.
okay, we're back in the studio here interviewing the Vows on the Sitting in the Park show on WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just the B-side of your guys' first record. It was called Lost in the City. Both sides of that record was really nice. And you were actually telling me earlier that some of the Shy Lights are actually playing the music on that record. Is that right?
Yes. Eugene Records playing the guitar.
Okay.
And Marshall is playing the drums.
Yeah, which is a lot of people don't know that Marshall was originally a drummer.
His
cousin Terry was also a drummer.
Right.
Yeah. Somebody who was in another group, the Marlins, told me that they were also playing on their records too. So that's an interesting sort of fact that a lot of people don't know, is they were originally musicians. And you guys were telling me you originally like tutored them on how to sing. Is that right? Or kind of helped them out?
Well, we helped them with some background. Eugene was already, he had his stuff together.
Okay.
But, you know, sometimes you help people out that didn't know how to change from different types of backgrounds. So we would help everybody because everybody was there. You know, everybody helped everybody.
Yeah. So Bob Lee and his label, he didn't do much with the record. Like, he didn't promote it. So even though it was an excellent record, it didn't get that much airplay, right?
No, it didn't.
No, all the promotion that we did on it, we basically did ourselves.
That was through like the record hops you did, right?
Right,
right.
So
Herb Kent.
So can you talk a little bit about the record hops you did and where they were?
Golden Dolphin. What else did we do? We did
St. Anselm. Also the one that he had on the west side at one of the Catholic schools.
And oh, was that on Jackson?
We did, yeah. Mm-hmm. And we did a record shops.
Okay.
You know.
So like in stores or something.
Right.
Maybe?
Promotional right. type things, mm-hmm. you know.
So, but it was mostly like the schools and stuff, like to teenagers you're targeting, like people
basically,
in school.
Yeah.
So, actually, he ended up repressing the record later under different names, I guess to try to like recapitalize on you when you were on other labels. But he later released it under the names the Symphonics, which I don't know how he came up with that. Where he got that name from.
Very interesting.
And then after you had changed your name later to the Majors, which we'll get to, or the Major Four, he released it under the name the Majors also, I guess, to try to capitalize on your, but I guess he still never did anything with it, so they didn't really sell.
Yeah.
But then after that, you got signed to the Randy label, or
right.
Ruth Moore got you on the Randy label. And that label, I read in the Chicago Soul Book it said some people who owned it, but you were saying you remember some Chicago DJ had something to do with it.
I still can't recall his name. He came in later as we had been working right with Andre Williams and the other gentleman name was Mr. Stone. We had been working with him, and I just can't recall the.
A little short
the DJ's name, but it was one of the.
It was like one of the white DJs,
right,
on
WLS. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you recorded one record on this Randy label, and it's got one side's a really nice harmony cut. It's called Girl in Red, and the other side's more like an R&B cut that Andre Williams did called Born with the Rhythm.
Right.
So I'm going to play the Girl in Red side. So do you remember who wrote this?
Larry Montgomery.
Oh, okay. So who's singing lead on this?
Larry's also singing lead.
Okay, so I'll play it and then we'll talk more.
I woke up this morning sad and lonely. Woke up, got out of bed. Looking for that girl in me.
Okay, that was just the Vowels with Girl in Red, and they're actually up here in the studio doing an interview. I was just saying that I actually originally thought that record had came out first because it has an earlier, almost like doo-wop type of sound. Uh-huh. Versus the first record I played, it's almost like straight soul harmony. And you guys were saying that the difference is probably because of Larry Montgomery was the writer. Right. On that record, so you had a different writing style than Lawrence Bibbs.
Right.
So before we talk more, I'm going to play the other side, which is a very different sound for you, and none of your other records sound like this. And that's because Andre Williams did right. this one on you, right?
Right.
Did he write this record, too?
I don't remember if he wrote it. I know that he had it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So this record, it's called Born with the Rhythm, and it's very like R&B kind of cut. So here it is.
Did you say you like to dance? But man, you know you gotta be born with the rhythm. I said born with the rhythm. I mean born with the rhythm. I was at a dance the other night. The music I heard, it was out of sight. Looking over the crowd, having a ball. I spied a square leaning on the wall.
Okay, we're back in the studio with the Vowels, and that was just one of the early sides you did in '63 called Born with the Rhythm, and Andre Williams produced that record, and a caller just called up and actually wanted to know, how did you get hooked up with Andre Williams? It was just he was working on the label, and then...
Same thing with our manager.
No, okay, Ruth Moore just hooked you up with him.
Basically what happened was we were at Randy, and they had brought Andre in. And when he came in, he came in and he had all of this, all the material and, you know, stuff with him. So that's how we got hooked up with
him. So Randy just brought him in as a producer.
Right.
So, and you guys were just mentioning that in the background there's actually a woman in that record. And that woman is,
yes, it is.
Joyce Kennedy singing with you.
Right.
So, yeah, so we're going to give a little background, but Joyce Kennedy, I guess she later became much more famous as the lead of the funk group Mother's Finest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But her original recordings, like she got her start sort of with you guys
right.
on this same label. So I guess what's Ruth Moore was her manager too, right?
Yeah. Right.
Is there some story? Do you know how she got hooked up with Ruth? Or she was from the same area as you guys?
Yeah.
And she was just 14 when she got hooked up with Ruth Moore at that time, right?
Right.
So you guys like did you help find her or she ended up you don't know how she got hooked up or what happened?
We didn't help find her, but she wanted to sing.
Okay.
And you know the house was kind of famous for drawing Ruth's
house.
Sing. Right.
Okay, so she just ended up coming by there and
right.
being like, I want to sing.
Right.
Okay, so you ended up actually, she ended up actually recording four songs on the Randy label, like when she was 14, and you guys were actually involved with all four records. You were singing on the background on all
right.
all four of the records. So did you guys write any of the songs too? I know Ruth Moore had writing credits on some of the records, but
no, I think most of that material that she did was Andre.
Okay.
Andre brought it in.
So I'm going to play one of the songs that you guys recorded. She recorded with you guys in the background. This record is called "Darling, I Still Love You." Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You're now listening to a very special interview I'm doing up in here on the Sitting in the Park show with the Chicago group, The Vows, legendary Chicago group. I say legendary because it's not like you're the most famous Chicago group, but collectors are definitely all looking for your records. So at least you're legendary with collectors. Because you cut a lot of really nice records. And on that record, that was just Joyce Kennedy, actually, and you guys were all singing in the background.
Right.
And you guys wanted me to mention that if anybody knows, has any contact information or knows, like, how to get in contact with Joyce Kennedy now, to give me a call up here, because I'd definitely like to get back in contact with her.
Looking for you, Joyce.
Yeah, I'm like, she definitely became much more famous, so this is her roots.
Right.
With that record, I think like The Other Side is misunderstood, and one of those sides got play on radios because that comes up and that record shows up in Chicago sometimes. So, mm-hmm. I think that record got some play on the radio, and we definitely have a lot of material to get to. So I wanted to sort of move on. But another group that Ruth Moore managed that you were sort of affiliated with were the Kittens,
right?
So, and you, I was going to play, Ruth Moore and Lawrence Bibbs have writing credits on one of their records, so I was going to play that record. But I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about who they were or how they got, if you remember when they got hooked up with Ruth Moore and how you got, and how you knew them.
Basically, she was almost the same, wasn't it? Bernice came by the house.
Right. They were also neighborhood young ladies.
Okay.
And they actually... Miss Moore actually kind of put them together.
Okay.
You know, because they had different talents, I guess you could say. You know, but she kind of put them together, and then as the pieces came together, you know, she formulated that, and then you know, they became the Kittens.
Yeah, and they ended up on a lot of labels. I think they did a song called "Looky Looky" that a ton of groups covered later, and like they had a record on one of Bob Lee's labels, and on Chess and on ABC, so they were on a lot of different labels. But this is one of their ABC records that I'm going to play. That, like I said, Ruth Moore and Lawrence Bibbs actually wrote this song. Did you write it for them originally, or?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So Ruth recognized that you had talent because you were writing a lot of the group songs and at the piano, and then she asked you to write stuff for other people. Is that what happened?
Well, we all had the talent.
Okay, you were all right.
I got lucky.
Okay. Okay, so this is the Kittens with Undecided You. Okay, we're back up here in the studio doing a special interview with The Vows. And that record I just played was one of the records that Lawrence wrote that was by The Kittens, and that was called Undecided You. That came out, I think, around 1965. So I guess the records I played by you earlier all came out around 1963, I think. So, and you guys ended up not like... I think Bob Lee released like one more record on you with the name, it's called Say You'll Be Mine later, I think around 1964, but you guys ended up not releasing any more records for a while, up to like 67. And I guess what happened was, I guess you guys were just doing shows at the time, like you were touring, trying, you, I guess you couldn't get a contract with a label in that time.
Right. We were just doing shows.
Okay. And can you talk about, you guys ended up doing, like, being on a specific sort of circuit of shows that were different than some of the other groups that I talked to. Like, some of the groups I talked to, they did, like, shows in Southside clubs at, like, the High Chaparral and stuff.
We did, like, Manheim Road, Club GG.
Okay.
Rick Caceres Club.
So all of that is, like, west of Chicago, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So...
yeah, we did basically a western suburban area.
Okay.
And then around the north side down to the Gold Coast.
Okay.
You know, that type of circuit.
We tried to get on the Playboy circuit, but we didn't have no tail, so.
So and what were some of the groups that you were doing shows with? Like were the Kittens on the same circuit?
Yeah, Kittens was on. Joyce Kennedy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What was the comedian that was with us?
Billy Wallace.
Billy Wallace.
Yeah, we had a whole, like, it was like a
review.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and that was all between the period of, like, 63 to 67, right?
Right.
And I guess what happened around then is you guys hadn't recorded anything, and I guess around that time, Burl got drafted, right?
Right.
So you had to go over to Vietnam.
No, I didn't make it that far.
Oh, okay.
I didn't make it that far.
But the group, I guess, changed, like, they wanted to get a new start, so they changed their name, right? You changed your name to the Majors?
No, that wasn't why we changed.
Oh, okay.
No, we were going to use the same name, but then we got with a different company.
Okay.
And the guy's name was Mickey Stevenson, and he automatically decided himself that he would like to change the name.
Okay, so we'll talk about that. Actually, Mickey Stevenson, this is around 1967. Right, sometime around 66, 67?
About 68, I think.
Okay, I think your first, yeah, sometime around then.
Yeah.
And Mickey Stevenson, pretty famous, like, Motown producer. He was married to Kim Weston.
Right. Dancing in the Street was his song, and I think he wrote that.
Yeah, one of his favorite hits, yeah.
Yeah, and he had his own production company. It was like Mick-Kim, like his and Kim's name together. And he had left Motown to try to become a producer, I guess, for himself and work with other labels. So how did you get hooked up with Mickey Stevenson?
Same way with Miss Moore. I mean, I think we were with Jade Enterprises.
We were with Jade Enterprises with Al Williams.
Right.
And he had a contact with Mickey Stevenson, so they were looking for some Chicago talent. And he called Ruth Moore, and Ruth Moore, in turn, thought of the Vows.
Okay.
So she called him over for a rehearsal.
So Jade Enterprises was like a famous management company, right?
Yes. Yeah, it was a booking agency.
Okay, so Mickey Stevenson, through them and Ruth, got a hold of you.
Right.
So what happened? He auditioned you, and then he just thought you were good. He came to Chicago and auditioned you, is that right?
Right. He was in Chicago doing some work, him and his wife, Kim Weston, they were here doing some work with Oscar Brown Jr.
Okay.
And he had gotten in touch with Al, and that's how that came about. But he came over to the house to hear us. And he went through some things with us and had us just sing this, and he brought up a few of his tunes, and we put little backgrounds to them, that kind of thing. That was the kind of, I guess you call it, audition, you know.
So was that before or after you got drafted when he came through?
That was before.
Okay, so right, so he came through, and then right around that time you got drafted.
Well, actually what happened was he came through, and from that we went to New York.
Okay.
We went to New York, and we did... some background work there for him. We did some background work for Kim Weston, and also the Kittens were there too. They were there. They actually did some background work also.
Yeah, I wish I knew what records you were singing on the back background. And like
I wish I could remember them too.
It was probably around the time Kim Weston was on MGM Records, and I listened to some of them. And it didn't sound like you guys were on them. So I wasn't sure which ones. I don't know if they... Do you think they got released? You definitely probably got released on some records that you were in the background.
I really couldn't say.
It's hard to say. You know, they put so much stuff on the
show. Yeah, he had so many songs, so many tunes that he was doing at the time, because he was trying to actually build a label.
Okay. But I guess what ended up happening. So then after you guys came back from New York, you ended up getting drafted.
Right.
And then you guys had to find a replacement member. And that's how Kurt joined the group. And Kurt's one of the guys sitting up in here who's been silent until now. But now he enters the story. So Kurt, you were originally in the group The Traits.
Yeah, The Traits.
Right, and I'm sure everybody remembers the Chicago group The Traits, who did that excellent song Someday, Some Way. And so how did you get involved with the group, or do you remember how you entered?
Yeah, at that time we were singing with The Traits, and we had been singing kind of early too. In the years we were with Chess Records, Leonard and Phil Chess, and we were like on the shelf, and they never would put any of our stuff out. We would come there and do background and watch the Minnie Riperton record. And
yeah, I definitely would. I'm interested in doing like a whole interview about The Traits. And
oh yeah, that'll be later. Mm-hmm. So but, what happened was, and I was just bored with being in the studio and being with Leonard and Phil Chess, and they didn't do anything with us. So I was kind of a rebel, and I asked my mom, did she know anybody? And she was working at the time at Victor
Contaminants,
yeah. And Burl was working there, so she knew that he was going to the Army and that they would need a replacement. So she sent me over to Miss Moore's house.
Okay.
And Burl gave her the information, and Burl and Larry Montgomery. And I went over there for an audition, and it was like history then, because when I got there, I had never heard guys sing in all the categories. They were singing jazz and doo-wop and soul. I mean, they were just singing everything, and I was like, flabbergasted.
And you were talking earlier about how they were actually one of the groups that you heard when you were younger and wished.
Yeah,
you
I was beginning high school and I heard Lost in the City, and I fell in love with that record. I never thought one day I'd end up being with those guys until today. As a matter of fact, I didn't know until these years, until the later years, that it was actually Lawrence that had written those songs.
No, okay.
Yeah, and he was my confidant when I came to the majors, because Burl was gone, and Lawrence and I kind of clicked, friendship-wise.
So I guess what happened was you you joined the group, and then Mickey took you guys to L.A., is that right?
Right.
So what's the story with that? I think he had a deal with Venture Records, which was based out in L.A., and he took you guys out there to record, right?
Yes.
So what's the story behind that?
Well, the story was William Stevenson had he had a budget. They had gave him a budget for Venture Records, and also he was doing some stuff with Warner Brothers. He was doing a lot of deals during that time.
Okay.
So he came to Ms. Moore's house, and he said he wanted to get a fourth guy. So he said, okay, I'll come there when you get the fourth guy. And Ms. Moore, she liked me, and she said, you're going to be good. We're going to use you.
Okay.
So I was real happy. So Mickey Stevenson came by, and he heard the group. He said, that's it. We're going to Detroit. We're going to record. You know, this is a cut, or whatever they called it during that time, a wrap-up. So
you said they're going to Detroit? Is
yeah, we went to Detroit.
Okay.
And that was one of our first times going and to Detroit to record some records. He still had his connections there. As a matter of fact, I don't know where that was. Where was it, Lawrence?
Marvin Gaye's house.
Yeah.
And then Levi.
And Levi Stubbs.
Oh, Four Tops.
Yeah.
Actually, I was going to comment later, but your records as a major four ended up sounding a lot like the Four Tops. I think they had that kind of Detroit.
Because Mickey Stevenson wrote most of some songs for the Four Tops, like Just Another Lonely Night, and he wrote Sugar Pie Honey Bunch.
Okay.
So he was kind of in that vein. So.
So it definitely you had like a harder kind of sound than the Vows original records.
Yeah.
Yeah. So actually, but you said you first recorded in Detroit, and then how did you end up in L.A. recording with?
Well, that's because they offered him the Venture deal.
Okay.
Because he was just freelance producing in Detroit, and he just came here. But then during that time period, something happened, and Venture set something on the table for him. And
so, did anything you recorded in Detroit ever get released?
No.
So then you guys actually went to L.A. to record, and you actually ended up working with sort of, at the time they were working for Venture, but famous writers and producers, Willie Hutch and Leon Ware.
Yeah, it was quite an experience. Willie Hutch, Leon Ware, Cornelius Grant on The Temptations. He was the music director for The Temptations. And it was just a heck of a lot of talented guys. Dickie Cooper. Ivory Joe, Hunter.
Okay.
You remember her?
Clarence Paul.
Clarence Paul. Clarence he was the main inspiration for us. Yeah. He loved us, so he invited us to stay in his home when we went to California.
And I guess I'm going to actually play your first record that you recorded and released, and then we can talk a little bit more about your experience in California. This first record, I'm going to play is really nice. This is so actually you said that while you were in the studio, Mickey made you change your name to the major four, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you ended up being the major four, and this record, it's called Down in the Ghetto. This is really nice, and then we'll talk about it afterwards. Okay, that was just the Major Four with Down in the Ghetto, who they're the same group as the Vows, and we're actually up in the studio up in here talking with three of the members. So the story was you guys went to L.A. to record that record, and you guys were very excited at the time. you thought you were finally going to make it big off of that record.
I really thought I did. I really thought I was going to make it big. I was so happy. I used to walk to the studio every day. I loved it. I was ready.
And the studio was like in Beverly Hills. And Clarence Paul, who wrote for Stevie Wonder in his early years, he's a very talented writer. He let us stay in his home. And we would leave his home and go to Venture Studio and record.
So, and that record... I think Burl was telling me it was big, or maybe Lawrence was. It was big in Detroit.
Detroit, number one in Detroit. Oh, yeah. Down in the Ghetto, yeah.
Yeah, I think it got maybe some play in Chicago because the record turns up sometimes. And I was mentioning that you guys don't remember this, but that record actually reminds me. There was another group called the Exits from L.A.
Oh yeah.
And they had a hit called Under the Street Lamp, and that song is a similar kind of sound, like positive, like we're in the ghetto, but we're still, you know, still making it. So, and you guys were telling me that when you're talking at the end of the record, mm-hmm. Mickey Stevenson told you to do that.
Yeah, I said, hey, man, what's happening? You know, we were in a group talking like we were out on the street.
Like you're rapping.
But he got that from the idea because he created Dancing in the Street.
Okay.
So it was that same flavor, like.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely, I think it adds to the song, kind of makes it hipper sounding. Mm-hmm. So you and you were telling me you performed that record, actually, at the first Operation Push.
Black Expo.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about that later, mm-hmm. later actually. But how long were you guys in L.A. recording?
Well, actually, I got in the group, like Burl said, late 68. Mm-hmm. And from then, we were going back and forth to Detroit until the 70, until 69. And then we went to California in 69.
Okay. So originally you were going back and forth to Detroit, and then you went to California.
Yeah, then we went to California.
And you were in California for like three months, is that right?
Yeah, about 3 or 4 months.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So in those 3 months, did you record all the material that ended up being released on Venture?
We recorded
a lot more than that.
A lot more than that.
Okay.
We ended up having access to a lot of the Motown songs because of Clarence Paul, Dickie Cooper, and Mickey Stevenson.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you got access to some of the songs that by Motown writers.
Yeah, the Temptations recording. Okay. You know, and Marvin Gaye. We had access to one of Stevie Wonder's famous songs, "Rap on Your Door."
Okay, so you recorded that before
Lawrence.
Well, actually, Clarence Paul, he let us hear a tape of it.
Okay.
And I learned it right away, and he said, "Oh man, we could do that on you guys." I said, "Oh, I'd love to do it. I would." So we sang it first, but I never got a chance to do it.
It was put on the shelf.
And then Stevie ended up recording it.
No, Aretha Franklin.
Oh, Aretha did.
Yeah.
What song was it again? I'm sorry.
What's the name?
Rap on Your Door.
Rap on Your Door.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's interesting. So, I guess you were telling me earlier that one of your I'll play another record and then we'll talk more about the Venture records.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This is the second record you ended up releasing on Venture. This one's really nice too. This is called All of My Love. Okay, we're back in the air here with the Vowels, who are the same group as the Major Four. That was just the second record you ever released as the Major Four, and that was called All of My Love. That had a really nice, I guess, also four tops kind of sound. And a lot of that came from who you were working with, Willie Hutch, on that record,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Willie Hutch. Willie Hutch was a very good friend of ours in California. We met him in California, And he gave us a basket full of songs, and this was one of them, All of My Love.
And you guys were also, we mentioned this before, but you guys were also working with Leon Ware at the time. So it's kind of funny because you ended up having a Motown sound by working with people who had a Motown sound who weren't from Motown yet.
Yeah.
Like, because they only later went from, like, later ended up working for Motown, but at the time they were just L.A. guys.
They were in the wings.
They were writers.
They were writers, and they were always in the wings to like, runners up. To work for Motown in the early years, but they never got a shot. So when Mickey left, then they all followed him to venture.
So and you were telling me you remained friends with Willie Wright.
Yeah, Willie Hutch. He later came to Chicago and visited us. Did a show at E2. They did a show for him because of the Mac. All the pimps here in Chicago.
Yeah,
they dedicated a night to Don Juan.
Like, brother's gonna work it out.
Yeah, they dedicated that night to Willie Hutch. So he came here and invited Lawrence Bibbs and myself, Kirk Davis, to E2. It was the night before that traumatic thing happened at E2.
Yeah, that was
the
bad.
Night before.
Well, Venture ended up releasing three records on you guys. The third one was called it was just Another Lonely Night, mm-hmm. And we have a lot of stuff to talk about still, so I'll go back and play some of the records that I missed if we had time at the end of the show. But then you ended up what happening is Mickey Stevenson ended up releasing one of the records you recorded on his own label, like after I guess his Venture deal stopped, and Mickey Stevenson had a label called People. Around 1970, and he had released like some of Kim Weston's material, and it's different than the James Brown people too, so it was confusing that he had a label with the same name as another soul label. But he released a record on you guys, and it's billed as Fuzzy in the majors, right?
Right. Yeah.
So what's the story with the different name on this record?
Actually, what they wanted to do was they wanted to feature Mr. Buckner.
Okay.
Which is Fuzzy. So they wanted to change the name of the group to Fuzzy and the Majors, and I told them I didn't agree, because we all sang lead.
Okay.
We all went out there as a group, and we wanted to stay as a group.
Okay.
Not as Fuzzy and the Majors, so. But you know how that goes. When somebody's running the company, they do what they want.
So I guess what was happening is originally you were in L.A. for 3 months, right? But then Fuzzy stayed in L.A., right?
Right. He stayed, and they sent us back.
Okay, so but is all the material you released recorded in that 3 months? Is that right? Or did you end up going back to L.A. sometime?
Most of it was, but what was happening, Fuzzy was singing. See, I sat up all night and learned a song to sing, and Mickey Stevenson told me he wanted Fuzzy to sing it.
Okay.
So I'm saying, well, why did you, you know, tell us, didn't you tell us that you wanted Fuzzy to sing everything? So he said, well, I'm telling you now, Fuzzy's going to sing everything. So
he waited until we got there. So
yeah.
It was a kind of bad thing, because Lawrence really did do a lot of good leading. And while we were recording during that 3 months, Lawrence's voice was just edited out.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, because he did a lot of good stuff, and it was just edited out.
So we'll play. So the record he released on you came out in 1970 on the People label under the name Fuzzy and the Majors. And one side, I think it's a Bobby Womack song called Love. And then the other side is, I guess, an original called Leak in the Faucet.
By Leon Ware.
Yeah, I'm going to play the Leak in the Faucet side, and then we can talk more. So this is Fuzzy and the Majors from 1970 with Leak in the Faucet.
Lord knows my room was filled with blue. must I need it, my baby, baby. Can't get along with that old bleeding lady.
Okay, that was just Fuzzy in the Majors from 1970 with Leak in the Faucet. Definitely like a hard kind of four tops sounding record. And you guys were talking about how you didn't get much money from those records, especially because you didn't get the publishing on any of the records.
Well, actually, no, they had Mickey's company had all the publishing rights and all the. And most of the writers had their 50%, but they gave all the publishing to, I think it was Joe Bat and Mickey's publishing. Him and Kim had a publishing company.
The only song that we got any residuals off was Down in the Ghetto.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And they took all of that, talking about they used it for studio time and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So we never got a dime of that.
Yeah, well, I know it was like a hit in Detroit, but you guys should try to find out if it was ever on like a CD or something, because maybe it's probably out there somewhere now, something that was that big of a hit on like a big label.
Yeah.
So maybe got some money coming off of that, I don't know. And then Bob Lee, actually, I found like a collector who met him like maybe in the 80s or something like that, found out that he had pressed up a record under the name The Major Three. It was called Oh How It Hurts and What a Girl. And I have no idea about like what the record is. Like, he must have released it right after you changed the name to The Major Four, like to capitalize on it.
Oh.
But supposedly like only 200 copies were pressed. So if anyone's out there has a recording of that record or like has a copy somewhere and knows about it, you should give a call up here. Because yeah, definitely like try. I'm sure you guys would like to hear the recording.
I would like to hear it.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to ask around in England or something, because I'm sure I know copies exist, and then probably copies are floating around somewhere over there. So maybe eventually I'll be able to find somebody who has a recording of it. If anyone wants to call up, the number is 773-702-8424. So I guess that. So can you talk about I guess what happened with the group after it became Fuzzy in the Majors? Like Fuzzy, can you tell, like Fuzzy wanted to stay in L.A., right?
Yeah, well, I guess I can talk about that, because they sent the guys back home, Larry Montgomery and Lawrence Bibbs, and I was kind of roused about during that time, and so I wouldn't accept defeat. I came back to Chicago and I had a girlfriend who sang with a group called the Naturelles, which was
are the Naturelles from Chicago?
They're from Oakland.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's what I always thought they were in L.A. group.
Yeah, they're from L.A. So one of the girls, she and I were pretty tight, and she told me, Kirk, you got to come back, man, and see what's going on. So I went to back to L.A. and found out Fuzzy was doing everything on his own, which was expected, you know. And I don't blame the guy, because they offered him a deal, and he just took it.
And Mickey was, like, pampering him, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, how did you meet the girl from the Naturelles? It was while you were in L.A.?
When we first got there, you know, the Majors were in the studio, and everybody heard about it. So all the groups in L.A., Hank Ballard and the Ballads and all them, they came to the studio.
Oh, the Ballads you're talking about.
Yeah, the
God Bless Our Love,
yeah.
Love group.
Mm-hmm. So and, they wanted to see the Major Four, you know.
Okay. And you guys were saying that you actually, I was talking to you guys earlier, you guys actually maybe your voices are on some of the Ballads records?
Yeah, we did background for some of those.
That's interesting because they were already a group, mm-hmm. and they put you guys on it. Yeah, well, you don't remember what Ballads records you guys are on, right? Because that's interesting.
No, see, that's like that stuff they did about the lip syncing stuff. You know, they said that stuff been going on for years.
You don't like the two brothers who
they've been doing that.
Yeah, Millie Vanilli.
They've been doing that stuff forever, man. And, mm-hmm. and then they want to do those guys dirty like they did with that. That stuff been going on for a long time.
Yeah, they use certain people's voices. And
you'd be surprised at the people that right even here in Chicago that sang for some of the major stars because they were on tour. And they want to put a record out on them, and they just somebody else sang it close to their sound, and then they send it out to them, and they learn the song and sing it, and they say, "Oh well, I did it."
But the ballads though were like a
established already.
They recorded a lot of records, and yeah. you know, so they definitely
Hank Ballard. Yeah, they were established already.
I don't think it was Hank Ballard.
Wasn't Hank?
No, that's a different. No. That's
a different guy.
But it was
the Ballads. It wasn't the Hank.
I thought that was the same person.
No, they originally called themselves the Ballards, and then they became the Ballads. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Hank Ballard's a different guy.
Yeah. So anyway, they so they told me to come back, and when I went back to Venture Records, Clarence Paul, he was telling Mickey, "Well, the guy's out here now, so you have to put him to work." So they put me to work as a studio gopher. You know, I worked okay. around as a gopher.
Did he get coffee?
Got coffee and everything for everybody. Got a chance to meet Tina Turner, and
that's cool.
They came through there. But it was a really interesting experience for me, but actually I found out that there was nothing left for the Major Four, so that's when I came back and re-entered my group as the center stage.
So the group had sort of, broken up around that time then because of what happened. That was around 69, 70?
That was exactly 70, beginning of 70.
Okay, so I guess you guys sort of, you were telling me that you still tried to sort of do gigs as either the, I don't even know what you build yourself as, the Vowels or the Major Four.
No, we don't do either name. We would do stuff like, I mean, you know, the corporate stuff as different groups.
Okay.
Even.
So and you actually you were hooked up with Clarence Johnson for a little bit too, right?
Yeah,
for a short time.
So and you guys were telling me you sang at the first Black Expo, right?
Yes, we did.
What year was that?
That was the year Down in the Ghetto came out. That was '69, right?
I think Down in the Ghetto was around 67.
67?
Yeah.
Well, that's when the expo was. And Mickey wanted to introduce us at the same time. Him and Jesse Jackson and a lot of people at Push were together.
Okay.
And Kim was involved with Push a lot.
That's a good song for that,
Kim
too.
Weston, yeah. So she wanted to introduce the Majors, and we decided to do that Push show. It was fantastic. We had a whole full orchestra playing behind us.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the Shy Lights performed there too, right?
Yeah, they were there the same day.
Yeah, they had one of their album covers. It's like I think a letter to myself. There's like a picture of them, and I think it's at, I'm not sure it's at that one, but it's at one of the Black Expos that the picture is from. Maybe it was from the same.
Might have been
the same one you
might
got.
The
weekend.
Same one, yeah.
Yeah, the same one you guys.
Because it lasted like a weekend.
Okay.
Operation Push gave the expo. It lasted a whole weekend. Yeah.
So that was in Chicago.
In Chicago.
And you got a big response from that, or like people like you guys?
Yeah, I think we got a lot of radio play, but basically from the jocks that loved us, you know, like Butterball. He's from my hometown, Arkansas, my parents' hometown.
Okay.
So Butterball kind of played the record a few times. He liked it.
Okay. So, but then after that, I guess you ended up not. Like, you ended up not being able to, I guess, reform or record. You were just doing more background type work. And I guess one of the interesting things you were telling me that you did was that Clarence Johnson was trying to record. You recorded some stuff from Clarence Johnson that he never released.
Yeah. But well, then, Lawrence, the way that happened was Lawrence and I had put together another group with two other guys. And we got introduced to Clarence Johnson. And, you know, he liked our sound.
Okay.
And we did some...
When was that, like around 1970?
A little bit later, maybe 73, 72, something.
Oh, okay. So, he liked your sound, and he recorded some stuff and never put it out, really.
Right.
But then one project that he was working on, he was working with the Brighter Side of Darkness at the time, right?
Right.
So you guys were telling me about how, he was trying to get the album out with 20th Century. That was a label he was on.
Right.
And the Brighter Side of Darkness had some kind of internal disputes. And they actually broke up before he could get all the material on them finished.
Right.
So you guys ended up actually doing the background recordings on some of the Brighter Side of Darkness records, right?
Right. One particular tune that we did.
So it's interesting because they were all a bunch of little kids, but right. You guys were much older. So
yeah, we tried to tell him that.
So what he just mixed your voices kind of low, but yeah. to hide it. So actually, this is the record that you guys are singing on. I think he never released it as on the 20th Century label. He released it later on his own label, Starview.
Okay.
So it was, I think it was one of the last Brighter Side of Darkness records. I think he put it out around 74.
Mm-hmm.
So this track is called Oh Baby, and it's got the lead singer of the Brighter Side of Darkness, but with actually the Vows singing in the background, so this is interesting. Okay, that was just the Brighter Side of Darkness, but it's actually the lead of the Brighter Side of Darkness with the Vows in the background singing "Oh Baby," and you could tell listening to that record that it was you guys and not a bunch of kids singing in the background, and so I guess that was sort of like the end of the group. Like, you guys were just trying for a while to get something back together and in the 70s, and just nothing materialized. Is that what happened?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, I guess it's a similar story to when I was talking to the guy from the Five Wagers up here. Like, a lot of the Chicago record labels sort of left Chicago, and a lot of the clubs went away, so there was not as much opportunity for musicians to, you know, record and perform.
It was always work, but, you know, you had to have a foundation. I mean, the group that you had, you know, all the guys were just falling apart, man. And when one would fall out and the other one would realize, well...
Actually, everybody was just getting discouraged.
Right, I got to feed my kid, you know, so that type of thing.
I can think,
you get a job, man. Go, hey, do what you have to do. And that's what basically broke up a lot of groups.
Yeah, a lot of people, they get bitter after trying for so long with nothing materializing.
Yeah.
So, one thing that we didn't talk about during the interview was you actually wrote a song that was actually a hit in Chicago for another group that Ruth Moore managed. It was a group called Silk, and they had a big hit in Chicago. It was called "Fallen in Love Isn't Easy." So, and the writers on that record are Lawrence Bibbs and
Kirk Davis.
Yeah, Kirk Davis, which is you. and the B side was actually you guys and Larry Montgomery, the other member who's not present today, who was the writer on the B side of the record. So, do you remember when this record came out?
Actually, I'm not really, not the year that it came out, but I remember Miss Moore said they needed some material, and Lawrence and I came up with "Falling in Love Isn't Easy," and then Larry had some lyrics, and Lawrence and I play guitar, I play bass, and Lawrence plays lead guitar, so we got together and put some music to the Come Over Here version.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was the flip side.
So wait, which is the A side, the Come Over Here or the Falling in
Love? Falling in Love.
So this record, I think it came out around 71.
Yeah.
So that was actually after you were already back, you were back, you know, trying to, you know, I guess doing background stuff, writing.
Yeah, that's, I was with the Center Stage then.
Okay. So this is, I'll play the record and we can talk a little bit more. This is Silk with "Falling in Love Isn't Easy." Okay, that was just Chicago group Silk with "Falling in Love Isn't Easy," and you guys actually Lawrence Bibbs and Kirk Davis actually wrote that record, and you guys were telling me about who the group was, right? The lead of the group, what was her name?
Yeah, Cynthia Washington. She's a sister of Gregory Washington, who was
he wrote "Someday, Some Way," and he was a guitarist, right?
Yeah, he was a guitarist. Mm-hmm. He was very talented. He actually, he's one of the members of Curtis Mayfield's family.
Oh, okay.
And he's a very famous guitar player.
Yeah, definitely. He worked with a lot of the Chicago groups, right?
Very much so. Betty Everett, and you name it, man. Walter Jackson.
And yeah. Cynthia's still around in Chicago, right?
Yes, yeah. She is.
She still lives on the west side of Chicago on Independence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, maybe one day I'll get to talk to her. I don't know. And I think we have a little bit more time. I'll play maybe time for a couple more records. I'm going to play the B-side, which you guys also wrote and Larry Montgomery wrote. This is Come Over Here. Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You're listening to a very special version of the Sitting in the Park show. This is a special interview I've been doing with the Vows. And first of all, I want to say thanks to everybody for coming. I really appreciate you guys coming
Welcome
up here and talking
Bob.
To me.
All right, thank you, Bob.
And we got a little bit of extra time because the next DJ is late. But apparently CTA is messing him up. But I was wondering if you guys could talk a little bit about what you guys are doing now, actually.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm Kirk Davis. I'm presently working as a freelance singer, background bass guitar player, and songwriter. I work with some of the orchestras here in the city. We do corporate events, and we've been doing all the hotels downtown and some of the riverboats. It's been a blast, but, you know, doing the Chitlin' Circuit is really kind of hard. You know, when you're gigging, it's kind of hard, but that's what we have to do now since we're not recording artists any longer.
But you were able to stay involved with music, though, which is positive.
Oh, yes, very much so. And as a result, right now I'm currently writing some songs. I'm going to try to do a tribute to Miss Ruth Moore. And collectively, Lawrence Bibbs and Burl Bynum and myself, we're going to try to just show her how much she has taught us. And just do a tribute to her, and probably put out another record.
So she was your manager, and she managed all those, like she managed the Kittens and Joyce Kennedy and the five Wagers and Silk.
Yeah, we were all
Billy Butler,
Billy Butler,
all of those.
Okay,
Miss Moore was like the mother.
So and she passed away, right?
Yes.
Right. That was what, in the
80s? It was in the 80s. I don't remember exactly what year.
Beginning of the 80s, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's definitely positive, like giving her recognition for.
Yeah.
Because I'm a collector, but I never even heard of her until, I interviewed the James Westbrook of the Five Wagers. So, mm-hmm. I guess getting her name out and stuff. Like I started noticing her name on some of the records that I was playing. So, I guess it's positive, sort of getting her name
well,
out.
Well, before Miss Moore, it was a guy called Donald Clark. He had the Wages, the Deltas, and all of us, the Center Stage, the Trades. I mean, it was like a family. So later on, when Miss Moore started her productions, we all kind of went with her.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks for coming by again, and thanks for giving us that information. Since we have more time, I'll be playing however many more of the records I left off that I could fit in the show, since you guys got a lot of them.
We're enjoying it.
Thank you.
And this next record was the other record that Bob Lee released on you guys, and it's like a bluesier cut. I think he released it around 1964. This track is called Say You'll Be Mine. And if anyone has any questions for the group or anything, you can also call up at 773-702-8424. So again, this is The Vowels with Say You'll Be Mine. Okay, that was just the other record that Bob Lee released on the Vowels. That was called Say You'll Be Mine. And if listeners are tuning in just now confused, James is a little bit late for the Soul Show, so we're going to continue with our interview with the Vowels. And you said that Fuzzy was actually the one singing lead on that record,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Joseph Buckner. Better known as Fuzzy.
Okay, and he was like a more bluesier type of lead, right?
He was a balladeer. He sung gospel and jazz and blues. I mean, phenomenal.
Okay.
So that was his forte.
Yeah, so it's like all of you had different sorts of styles that you brought to the group. So this next record I'm going to play is one of the Joyce Kennedy records that you sang backup on. This record is called How Old Is Old. This is the second Joyce Kennedy record that got released after the first one I played. So here's Joyce Kennedy with the Vowels in the background. with How Old Is Old. Okay, that was just Joyce Kennedy with the vowels in the background. That record was called How Old Is Old. And, yeah, a woman just called up and said she was definitely enjoying your sound and talking about how it was too bad that at the time, like, you guys couldn't get your stuff released or distributed well.
Thank you very much. Thank you, ma'am.
We appreciate that.
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
And I guess that was a lot story of a lot of groups. Like, they couldn't pay the DJs to play the records.
Oh, yeah, payola was around during that time.
So, you had to be behind a major label, like like a powerhouse, like Motown or something, to really get the promote. So a lot of excellent Chicago records sort of got lost. But it's definitely good that you guys are doing your own thing now and releasing your own material.
Younger artists, but we will release something soon, definitely.
So, we'll continue playing more of your guys' records until the next DJ James shows up. This record that I'm going to play next is the third record that got released on you as the Major Four, and this is your version of Just Another Lonely Night. So here it is. Okay, that was just the Major Four with the last record that got released under that name with Just Another Lonely Night. And I actually don't, I would play the B-side of that, it, called This Little Girl, but I haven't been able to find it with the B-side. And you guys, like you said, you recorded a ton of material at Venture Studios, but most of it just was never released. So, yeah, it would be good if somebody, I don't even know, is Mickey, do you know if Mickey Stevenson's still around?
Well, if you are, Mickey, you need to give us a call. We got time for you.
Yeah, now I don't think he's going to call you anymore.
No, we just got hits, tons of hits and good songs now.
Okay.
He taught us a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, we learned a lot from Mickey.
Okay, well, yeah, I mean, definitely, someone should track down that material and reissue it, because there's probably a lot of excellent material there. So, this next record I'm going to play is another one of the Joyce Kennedy sides that you sing behind. It's funny because when you guys originally told me you were singing behind Joyce Kennedy, I was playing the records on like all the records because some of them sound like girls singing in the background, but it's actually all of them are just you guys singing, but some of them you're singing higher.
And that's what amazed me when I came into the group was the high harmony that the guys had. A lot of times I thought they were women myself.
That for sure.
I was like, after you saw him.
After, yeah, when I saw him, I said, oh, my bad.
Yeah, that was the sound that they wanted behind her.
Okay, so this I think this one got some play in Chicago. This is Joyce Kennedy with Misunderstood. Okay, that was just one of Joyce Kennedy's early records with Misunderstood. That was the first record she ever released, I think, around 1963 or 62. She was only 14 back then, so you guys were definitely there when she was coming up. Do you remember what happened when she made it big? Were you stayed in contact with her through the early 70s at least?
Yeah. She called me a couple of times, and after that, I didn't hear anything else from her.
She went on the road with us with Jade Enterprises, and we did a Playboy circuit together.
Okay.
That was our last performance. I think that was in 69.
I don't remember.
Was that she already had Mother's Finest at that time?
No,
she didn't.
No, oh, okay.
So it must have been 67.
Oh, okay.
67, 68, yeah.
I think she formed Mother's Finest, like their first records are around 70, 73, yeah. I think. So we, do you still in, were you still in contact with her around
yeah,
then?
Yeah, oh yeah. I as a matter of fact, I had an opportunity to go down and check Mother Spines out when they when she first put it together. They came here to do a job, and I had a chance to get down and hang out with her, and we hung out just about all night, you know, talking about the old times and everything, you know. So, you know, like you were saying earlier, if there's somebody out there that has contact with her, please contact Bob here at the station. We would really love to hear from her.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, definitely. I'll put the word out too. I'll try to see if I could find out what's going on with her now. So this next record I'm going to play is the last one of the four records. You don't remember if you recorded any more with her, because she had a bunch of early records, actually. She was on a label called Fontana. I didn't bring that record because I didn't think we would be going for two hours long.
Well, really don't know. We'd probably have to hear it.
Oh, okay.
You know, and then we would
and then
know.
Later she was on OK Records, actually, and she had a few. But I think most of her OK Records didn't even have a group singing on them, so
okay.
So that you guys probably weren't on those for sure. But this record is, like I said, the last Joyce Kennedy record that you guys are singing behind, or probably one of the last ones. This is called Can't Take a Chance. Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You're still listening to the Sitting in the Park show. James is a little bit late for the Southern Soul show, but he should be here soon. So since he's late, we're getting to continue the interview with the Vows, who, again, I'm really glad came up here and got their story out. That was just the Joyce Kennedy with Can't Take a Chance, with the Vows singing in the background, singing really, really high, like another R&B-ish kind of record. I think Andre Williams did that one too, right?
Andre.
Yeah, definitely had his sort of sound. I guess the last two records that I brought here, I wish I had that weird one that Bob Lee releases, the Major 3, but maybe someday I'll get to hear it. But the last two records I got up here to play on you guys are the other sides I have of the Major 4 records on Venture. So this one I'm going to play now, it's the B side of All of My Love, and this is called I Don't Believe in Losing.
I won't believe in losing. know you run around these days. Still I tell myself you're a welcome traveler. Glad you found time to pass my way. Cause you fill my world with love and laughter. Took too long to get what I've got. It's a pleasure.
Okay, so that was just the major four with I Can't Believe in Losing.
By Leon Ware.
Yeah, definitely. That was a really nice B-side. That was the B-side of All of My Love. This next record I'm going to play was actually the A-side of the Fuzzy and the Majors record. I think it's a Bobby Womack song. The song is called Love.
Thank you.
Okay, that was just Fuzzy in the Majors with L-O-V-E, Love. So I got one more song on you guys, so I guess this will be the last time we talk on the air. So first of all, I want to say thanks again for you guys coming down, and we got this extra time because James is a little late. You guys said you were actually on some TV shows in the early 70s, like local shows.
Oh, yeah, the Mall Queen show and Kitty A-Go-Go. Don Cornelius Soul Train on Channel 26.
Were you on there
Center Stage. That was the Center
Stage. Oh, okay. That was your other group.
Yeah, that was. We did the show. The name, I think, was Come Sit. The Come Sit. It was a show that came on Sunday mornings. And we did that, and we did quite a bit of radio back in those days.
So. Oh, okay. And Kurt was just telling me that you and Fuzzy actually are on Hickey Burr, the Bill Cosby theme song.
Yeah, they needed some vocalists in for Warner Brothers during the time we were with Mickey Stevenson, and they called Fuzzy and I down, and we did the first original recording of that Hickey Burr song where Fuzzy would say, "Ooh, Lord," something like that, and we were all in the background saying soul things like Soul Brothers in the background, yeah.
That's awesome. You know, that's a version, is that the version that's on that Quincy Jones, there's a Quincy Jones album?
Yeah, I think it is, yes.
Okay, well, that's you could play that record, be like, that's me.
Yeah.
Another interesting thing about when we were in New York doing the background work behind Kim, that's where Lawrence and I, we had an opportunity to meet Quincy Jones.
Okay.
He came in to the studio when we were there in New York, and he was great. He, you know,
beautiful,
gave us some best wishes and said, "Hey, you guys really sound good," and everything. So he's really a genuine person.
Yeah, that's great that you got to work with him too. So this is the final time we'll be talking on the air with the Vows. So I got to say thanks again, Kurt. You got to come back to do Center Stage interview because I'm sure you had your own interesting story about your group. And this is the last. And you guys, everyone should look out for the material, whatever you put out when you guys are putting it. I'll definitely announce it up here. But they'll definitely be putting something out, like they were talking about the tribute to Ruth Moore, and definitely keep your eyes open for these guys. So this last record I'll be playing is the B-side of Down in the Ghetto. This is Sugar Pie, and James will be up here really soon with the Southern Soul Show, so keep listening.